First, if you've been thinking about checking out that new local restaurant or catching a movie in the theater, you might also ask yourself who to go with. And the best answer might be yourself. Our next guest found a lot of value in going on a regular self-date and has written about the benefits of doing things in public by ourselves and embracing solitude. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you do this? Do you set aside time to go out and do things alone? Where do you like to go by yourself? Do you feel weird, as I do, maybe eating at a restaurant by yourself? Nobody's judging you, but does it feel weird? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Faith Hill is a senior associate editor at The Atlantic. She's been writing about the value of solitude in a few pieces lately. Her latest is called Take Yourself on a Date. Faith, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, you've been kind of on the solitude beat lately. The piece I just mentioned, you wrote about the value of time alone for kids, about people who are nocturnal because they enjoy being by themselves. What got you interested in why people choose to spend time alone?
Yeah, well, I really love my time alone, and socializing can really drain me. But at the same time, I feel like my relationships are extremely important to me. I want to tend to them. I care about them. So just personally, the balance between solitude and social connection is something I think about a lot. I'm sort of always looking for this perfect in-between. And I think for a lot of people, it's complicated. It's hard to figure out how much alone time you should carve out for yourself, particularly because I think alone time isn't really valued like social time is. So, you hear a lot about the need for connection and community, but I was sort of interested in the flip side to that.
And off the top, I want to distinguish between loneliness and solitude. Could you spell out the difference there a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, a lot of times people sort of think of the difference in terms of quantity, that, you want some time alone, but not too much. And when you have too much, it's loneliness. And there's some truth to that. I think different people need different amounts of alone time, but you don't probably want to have too much. But another thing that matters is quality. So a lot of it is really in sort of how you're looking at your alone time, how you're approaching it, and sort of, the attitude that you come at it with. So I think for a lot of people, even if they didn't choose to have alone time, it can really help to sort of think of it as an opportunity.
And the intentionality is something that you are really focused on, I think, as opposed to, I got, an hour or two by myself. What am I going to do? Read a book, this or that. You really want this to be premeditated. And that's something you've been working on yourself. Why is that important?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for a long time, I even though I thought of myself as someone who liked alone time, I did not think of like doing an activity with it or making it any kind of special ritual. It was just sort of when I was able to get it, pockets in between things. But I think that you sort of look at your alone time differently if you make a ritual out of it. And a lot of times we don't think about solitude that way. We think of it either as like a productive time or just empty time. But we don't think of it as like the time that we reserve for fun things. So I kind of wanted to focus on just like that ability to really do whatever you would want to do, but do it by yourself. And that can include, being in public, being in the world, doing what you love.
And that's what you've chosen to do with a lot of your intentional, your planned solitude is do things in public. Why is that important to you to be going out and doing a museum or a dinner or whatever it might be?
Yeah, I think there's something special about being alone around other people and just in the world, maybe experiencing art or food, smelling smells and hearing music and voices. It sort of makes you remember that you're like, you don't exist outside of the world. You're sort of part of this vast symphony of human experience. But at the same time, you still get to sort of listen to your own thoughts and you don't have to always be responding to someone else. I think, when you're socializing, you don't always even fully appreciate the sort of like sensory experience going on around you, ironically enough, because you're sort of wrapped up in conversation or discussing what to do next. So it can actually be a way to really connect with the world and be sort of present in space and, seeing people and listening.
That sounds cool. But I'm also, as you're talking, I'm thinking there's almost like a cliche scene in movies and TV shows where our protagonist shows up at the restaurant by themselves and the maitre d' or waiter or whatever is like, will sir be dining alone today, with a bit of pity? And it's like this sad sort of pathetic thing. How do we overcome that mindset?
It's a good question. I think in America, at least, we really value extroversion and social connection. And, you know, there's research about how people sort of assume that if they're out doing something enjoyable in public, like they assume people will think that they are lonely or friendless. But, you know, some of that research also shows that, like, people overestimate the degree to which they'll seem lonely. So I think, you know, partly it's real, but partly it's in our heads and we kind of let ourselves worry about it too much. And I think probably if you go out and do something, you might be, you know, surprised if you knew what people were thinking about, that they're more concerned about themselves. But I also think there's sort of different levels to it. So, you know, I can totally understand being nervous to go to a crowded restaurant by yourself. And I think it's awesome if people do, but you don't need to do any one thing. So I kind of liked going to movies alone for that reason, because I get to sort of be, you know, around strangers, but also like in the dark, and I don't feel so in the spotlight. So, you know, I think part of the beauty of the self-date is really you choosing what you want to do. And there's a lot of different options. You know, you could go for a walk, you could be in the park, and some of them might feel a little bit more comfortable.
Talking to Faith Hill, Senior Associate Editor at The Atlantic, about the value of solitude and going out and doing things on our own and making a plan, being intentional about it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you do some version of this? Say, I'm going to plan for some time to go out and do what? Tell us about it. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Ellen is with us in Wausau. Ellen, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about?
So my comment is that I don't mind eating out by myself in a restaurant, and I often enjoy it. But 9 times out of 10, when I walk in and say table for one, the response I get is just one.
Oh, no. Well, do you find a different restaurant the next time then, Ellen?
I have stopped going to restaurants who give me really lousy tables, like a table back by the bathroom.
Oh, but you don't mind, you like it's them that are creating the problem here. Once you're there, you're fine eating by yourself.
Yes, definitely. But I get a negative response when people say just one.
Oh no. All right. Well, Ellen, well, if you've served Ellen in that way, cut it out. Be nice to Ellen when she shows up at your restaurant. Faith, there it is. I mean, I'll say when I'm at a restaurant eating by myself, I feel weird about it. If I see somebody else eating by themselves, I don't even think about it. I don't know. Why do some people anyway feel like we're judged or judging someone eating by themselves, like Ellen?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I do think, you know, there's can kind of be a mismatch there between how weird we feel and how we view other people. But I think it's a good point too, that it is partly like a bigger structural problem that, you know, we look at aloneness in this way. And it's, you know, easier said than done to just be like, go eat at a restaurant alone. Like some people are, you know, might make you feel weird about it. But in case it helps, one thing that I have found is really helpful is if I take a book, I feel like I can always have it in case I want to pull it out if I'm feeling weird, but I'm still, you know, having my own solo experience.
I have used the book shield before myself. Ellen, thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Faith Hill, Senior Associate Editor at The Atlantic, about the upside of doing things alone. Her latest piece is called Take Yourself on a Date. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you do this sort of thing? Take yourself out to dinner, movie, museum, hike, whatever. Does it feel weird when people see you doing something alone, or does it not? Do you not care what people think, even if they do look at you funny? Call 800-642-1234. Do you find a lot of value in solitude? Or, I don't know, does being up in your own head sometimes get a little much? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Faith Hill from The Atlantic, talking about why it can be good to do things by yourself out in public. Make time to do some solitary activities. We can get out a lot out of it, she says. Join in at 800-642-1234. If you have examples of this kind of thing in your own life, 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Let's go back to your calls now. Jeff is with us in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Good afternoon. Happy holidays. This is a fun topic for me. I vacation by myself. I get excited because I always meet new people when I go wherever I go. But I have a New Yorker cartoon idea on this topic.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, if you put a sweet potato on a park bench, the caption would read, "I am what I am."
Jeff, thanks a lot. A vacation by himself of faith. That's taking this even a step further.
Yes, it is. But apparently it's, you know, a lot of people feel the same. Rates of solo travel are way up, and a lot of people are doing it in 2022, which I think is great. And for my piece, I did talk to a travel coach who sort of, you know, told me that she has really been seeing this firsthand. And from talking to some of her clients, they've really been starting to feel like, you know, maybe they don't need to wait around for other people to take that trip they really want to take. So, you know, fingers crossed, maybe people are getting more comfortable with doing things by themselves. But I think solo travel is a really cool way of looking at that. So much you can experience, and so many people who are like dying to go places, but trying to coordinate with someone else. So it's great.
Jeff, happy solo travels. Kurt joins us now in Elgin, Illinois. Kurt, hi.
Yeah, hi. I was piggyback on what was just said, but I had something else to say. I've just retired, and I'm very much looking forward to, I've learned to look forward to trips that I would take by myself to all those places I would go to with other people. And I'm looking forward to that. And what I mentioned is I'm very happy being with myself and by myself in places, but I feel sad, I'll have to say, when I see other people who are just sitting by themselves, kind of like that Nighthawks, when you look at the whoever Edward Hopper's Nighthawks thing,
sure,
looking through that window. I feel sad about that, but I never feel that same for myself. I feel like I almost feel like I want to get into that mode when I can just be.
I love
by
it.
Myself.
Kurt, thank you so much for sharing that. Now, you, Faith, talked to a psychologist about that. There can be better or worse ways to be in our heads when we're doing this solitude stuff. What did you learn?
Yeah, it's so true. So I talked to the psychologist, Ethan Cross, about this. He wrote a book called Chatter, and it's about this kind of self-talk, as it's called. It's basically the internal conversation going on in your head. And he has found that self-talk can really help with introspection, but you have to do it in the right way, or else you can really sort of go down a rabbit hole of rumination. You know, one thing that can help with that is shifting the perspective that you use to talk to yourself. So literally like using the second or third person rather than the first. And instead of saying, you know, I should do something, you'd say you should, or, you know, she should. So the idea is that because you're usually nicer to other people than to yourself, you're kind of treating yourself as another person. So, you know, it might sound silly, but I think when you're out alone by yourself, it can be useful to think of it as sort of a similar principle where, you know, you're not just doing something yourself, but you're really taking yourself out to do something. You know, it's almost chivalrous and you're sort of getting to know yourself. So it's so true that there are sort of better and worse ways, and some people can sort of feel lonely if they are like very much, you know, wrapped up in their own head and feeling like just stuck within that rather than kind of in the world and having that distance.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Sue with us in Appleton. Sue, hi, what did you want to tell us about?
Hi, I wanted to talk about traveling and negotiating the world as a single woman. I go camping alone, long distance camping. I put on over 10,000 miles last year, and
wow,
I'll be leaving in January to do it again. And I'm a member of lots of women camper groups, and we discuss safety a lot, that we don't, some of us don't want our van to be, or our vehicles, campers, to be identified as a woman is in there. So there are various techniques and tips that women use to as decoys. So people might think there's a second person or a man with us when we're camping. But there are a lot of women doing this who are not necessarily single. We just love that we don't have to negotiate where we'll go, when we'll go, should we stop, should we change directions. It's just so much freedom. Just love it.
Sue, thank you so much for sharing the joys of it and the safety concerns. Faith, what do you think about Sue's experience?
Yeah, it's a really, really good point. And I think it's so true that, you know, some people really have to think about safety when they're thinking about being alone. And there are limits to, you know, just doing whatever you want to do out by yourself. But I love the idea of kind of doing it as a group, but still, you know, I think there are still chances for solitude within that. That's such a good point. And when I talked to that travel coach, she mentioned that she will sometimes talk to clients who are worried either about safety or just, you know, getting lonely, wanting to make sure they'll have the opportunity to be around people if they want to, even though they do want time to themselves. And she recommends walking groups. So it's sort of a similar idea of like, you know, you don't necessarily need to be talking all the time. It might be different than like going just with a partner or best friend. You're really expected to sort of be chatting constantly or, you know, just really spending your time together, but you can kind of be with people, but, you know, then also be in your head when you want to be. And I think that is sort of it's a beautiful part about that kind of solo travel and the self-date is that you have some control over that and you can kind of get both.
Thanks a lot for that call. Michael joins us now in Kaukauna. Michael, hello.
Oh, have been a field service technician for a big part of my career, and that involves being away from home and kind of into a forced doing things by your own. And you kind of just learn to get used to it and you learn to kind of enjoy it. One of the little tricks that I would always do is I would eat places where you could eat at the bar, because then you wouldn't be taking up a whole table for a group, and then people are more open to that. So that's just one of the things I learned. You just kind of learn to roll with it. You have to enjoy it and look at the different tips you can to make it easier for the staff of the restaurant that you're at.
Michael, thanks a lot for sharing that experience. Faith, Michael didn't necessarily choose to be alone. The job put him there, but he made the most of it.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring this up because it really is, you know, it's kind of a documented thing that I talked to some researchers about when I was writing this piece, is that, you know, I sort of suspected, like thinking about pandemic isolation, like that if people were forced into some alone time, they would automatically not like it because they didn't feel they'd chosen it. But what I learned is actually that even, you know, when some people sort of found themselves having to be alone, it still sort of mattered how they, you know, then looked at the alone time. And there, you know, were a lot of people who I think found, you know, even through all the many difficult parts, that they liked some of that solitude more than they thought they would. So it really can change everything, sort of how you think about the alone time, even if it's, you know, you kind of find yourself with it.
Thanks a lot for that call. Faith, I wanted to take a couple minutes on another piece you wrote about kids and solitude. And, you know, we often hear about overscheduling, overbooking kids. How important is some alone time, some solitude for kids?
Yeah, it can be really important. You know, of course, kids, like, you know, most people, it's good to have some socializing. So it's not that they should, you know, have too much alone time. But I think people really don't think about kids needing any alone time at all. And it turns out there's some really important psychological benefits. You know, younger kids can kind of learn how to work out big emotions. Teenagers certainly use it for sort of reflection and thinking about their identity and who they are apart from their family unit and their friends. So I think it is really important for, you know, parents to sort of keep that in mind and ask their kid whether they, you know, feel like they have enough alone time, or, you know, they might want to cut back activities.
Now, getting back to the grownups here, Faith, suppose somebody's listening and thinking, okay, yeah, this sounds pretty good. And I never do this sort of thing, like never make a plan to take myself out and do whatever. Can you offer some encouragement, maybe some first steps for them to give it a shot?
Yeah. So, you know, I think like sort of crucial part of the self-date is that it is whatever you want it to be. So you shouldn't feel like, you know, you have to go out for 3 hours and eat at a restaurant alone. It's, you know, like the whole point of it is that it's tailored to you and what you want to do. So you can really, you know, dip your toe in. You could do something alone at home, but, you know, really make it feel special and sort of set that time aside and think of it as an opportunity that you want to celebrate. Or, you know, you could go out for a little bit and, you know, make it a shorter trip or always let yourself come home. So, you know, one researcher told me there are sort of like different rooms of solitude that you can enjoy. And, you know, one room might be total solitude and the other might be sort of a little bit of solitude, but you're around people and they can all serve different purposes. So I would just say it's, you know, maybe not useful always to be like a solitude purist. You know, it's really important, but it also is, you know, it's different for different people.
Faith, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
That's Faith Hill, Associate Senior Editor at The Atlantic. We talked to her about the benefits of doing things by ourselves and her latest piece called Take Yourself on a Date. You can find a link to that at WPR.org/Central Time. And if you do this, if you take yourself on a date, if you enjoy those planned moments or hours of solitude doing whatever it is you want to do, love to hear about it. You can tell us about it over on the Ideas Network Facebook page, or you can email ideas@WPR.org.